We're joined for our Peace Bucket today by Stephen Zunes, professor at University of San Francisco. Stephen has been with us many times over the years to talk about various peace issues, and we wanted to get Stephen's perspective on the situation in Afghanistan, where the Afghan government collapsed much sooner than perspective. So, Stephen, what's your sort of analysis of what's going on and what lessons should the Biden administration take to heart?
As someone who's been a rather outspoken critic of the Biden administration's foreign policies on a number of levels, I am in the unusual position of coming to his defense here. I mean, clearly screwed up in terms of not being prepared for such a rapid advance of the Taliban and their dramatic and sudden takeover of the entire country in terms of evacuating translators and other supporters in a timely manner. But the decision to withdraw, which was a decision made by a president, Trump, I think was a long overdue one. I mean, the whole thing really was a Ponzi scheme from the start. It was unsustainable. And Biden had the courage to call it out. And he no more deserves blame for the collapse in Afghanistan than Gerald Ford does for the collapse of the Saigon regime in Vietnam. These, in both cases, they were a long time coming, and they are a result of policy missteps and hubris and a lot of other things going back for decades under both Democratic and Republican administrations. The underlying reality is that the Afghan army, nominally at least, had over 300,000 troops as opposed to only 75,000 troops in the Taliban. The Afghan government had an air force. They had heavy equipment. They had gotten, over $100 billion in U.S. arms and aid, not to mention training from the most powerful armed force in the world. And yet, and Taliban had none of those things. And yet they are able to sweep across the country in just a matter of a couple of weeks. And that underscores the fact that it was not a military victory by the Taliban that keeping 2,500 American troops there, could have prevented. But it was a political collapse, a government that most Afghans found as illegitimate.
Will this situation finally convince the American media and political leaders that, in fact, nation building in these type of situation is just impossible? Or do they really not believe that, even they tell that to the American public and realize it's mainly about enriching military contractors at taxpayers' expense?
Yeah, I mean, the war in Afghanistan, I mean, it included, obviously, it was initiated by the Bush administration that had this imperial view of a new American century of U.S. hegemony, full spectrum dominance. And it was, very much part of that, which, of course, then, soon thereafter led to the a tragedy of Iraq. But there's also a fair amount of this kind of, liberal internationalism, a more idealistic view, that maybe we really could help rebuild the country and make it democratic and advance women's rights and things like that. The problem is that many of these idealistic goals were also those that the communist government in Afghanistan tried to do. I mean, a lot of them had very progressive reforms, but of course they rammed it down people's throats in such a way that created this Islamist reaction that the U.S. actually supported back when they were fighting the Soviets. But it shows, I think, in either case, a kind of arrogance that we could build a new society on our model as outsiders who really didn't understand the culture and the history or anything like that. But more importantly, I mean, I know a fair number of Afghans and Afghan Americans, and they've and most of them believe that they would like the United States and other national support and creating a better society, but they argue that it should have been like 10% military and 90% empowering civil society, sustainable development projects, kind of bottom-up grassroots things. Instead, 90% of the U.S. effort was military. And what, development work we did do, and with a few exceptions, was largely these top-down initiatives of dubious merit that run by these corrupt elites. And the in any case, that you know, the, what people in the Afghan countryside at least saw was not democracy, not development, but one of the most corrupt governments in the world, that was essentially a puppet of foreign powers, where their countryside was being subjected to heavy bombing with large thousands of civilian casualties, not to mention search and destroy operations, raids on people's homes, the kind of thing that turned people off. Because, you know, the bulk of the Taliban support is not from people who agree with their reactionary, misogynist, you know, theology and politics, with those who saw them as the vanguard of a popular uprising against foreign invaders and the regime that they installed, the same kind of energy that led them to defeat Alexander the Great and the Romans and the Persians and the Mongols and the British and the Russians and now the United States.
Now, of course, the alleged reason the United States initially attacked Afghanistan was to go after Al-Qaeda, who the United States accused of having been responsible for 9/11. The Taliban might argue, well, we brought in Al-Qaeda to help protect us against the warlords who you had empowered to help overthrow the Soviet Union-backed government. What's to stop a new cycle of terrorist camps and exactly happened the thing that we have allegedly did 20 years ago?
Well, I mean, though we have very good reason to be concerned about the welfare of Afghans under Taliban rule, given the nature, given the reactionary nature and violent nature of the how they do things. I think there is a fair enough evidence that they've learned their lesson, that they will not be serve as a refuge for international terrorist organizations, the global reach, because they know it would get the wrath of the world down on them. That's how they were thrown out of power back in 2001. So it's doubtful that they will make that mistake again. Indeed, there's a fair amount of evidence that the United States could have actually negotiated a deal where they would have handed over bin Laden, for trial in The Hague or somewhere. But the Bush people were hell-bent on going to war and seeking vengeance and having a victory under their belt as part of their march for global domination, which led to the invasion of Iraq. Indeed, we had the Taliban essentially defeated in 2002, and it was when we moved all our troops and our generals and our satellites and the attention of our leaders to Afghanistan. That's when the Taliban recrossed over the border and were able to set up their camps in the countryside again and gradually expanded their power until they finally took over everything earlier this week. But the underlying issue is that that Al-Qaeda was defeated way back in late 2001. That was the ostensible purpose of going to war in Afghanistan. So it raised the question, why do we stay there for another 19 years?
Now, what can or should the United States, do at this point? Obviously, you still have a country that needs to be rebuilt. And obviously, people are very concerned about how women will be treated. What role, if any, should the United States try to play at this point?
I think it's important that the U.S. be able to allow Afghans who want to leave, who have reason to fear for their personal safety, to be able to lead. These are particularly people that we used as translators and workers at the embassy and everything else, because it's quite possible that they could be singled out for punishment of one kind or another. And indeed, it's ironic. Some of the very Republicans who are attacking Biden for supposedly abandoning our allies in Afghanistan are the very people who've made it very difficult for Muslim immigrants to come to the United States and seek political asylum. But I think the humanitarian side is the most important one here. But I think to recognize really that there's a lot of things that the United States can't do. I mean, I think there's a sense that I think a lot of people believe that somehow the United States, because we're the world's number one superpower, we have this powerful armed force, is that we can go around and make things better, unless you're on the left and assume we're always there to make things worse. But the fact is that that for better or worse, the United States cannot snap its fingers and make things go a certain way. There are limits to military power, and the fact the U.S. and its allies were defeated by an enemy that was by almost any measure was far, far weaker militarily, underscores the whole fallacy of believing that we can impose military solutions on complex political, economic, social, and cultural problems.
I'm talking with Stephen Zunes, a professor at University of San Francisco. This has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network.